Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see. Nothing to see. Nothing to see.
You are listening to Nothing to See Here, a program of experimental radio produced at Mascot University. This episode is entitled Less.
I was born in 1938. First time I saw my father was in his casket in 1951. And my father died in the poorhouse. My father was born in 1889, and my mother in 1902, born in different centuries. So my father had been married before, and so I have a half brother and a half sister from that marriage, and then there were 11 of us. Anyway, he was a sawyer in the woods, and a really good one. My sister tells me he was so good that he made $4 a day back in the 30s, 1930s. He's the guy that runs a saw and can look at a log and know how much lumber he can get out of it. But apparently he was really good at that. Of course, it's all done by computers today. And if you know these mills at that time, usually they had a water wheel, usually an overshot where the water would go hit the top of it and turn all the equipment. And everything was run on belts and pulleys, and of course there were no shrouds on anything. It was all open. And the sawyer running this 38-inch saw blade with a carriage that carried the logs in, and I mean, just seconds, it would strip it off and it comes back, and the sawyer then flips it to another side and cuts another one off. And as I say, he was really good at this. But being in this dangerous place, a block hit him on the head one day. From then on, he was mentally incapacitated. Mother couldn't look after him. There were no social safety nets at the time, so the family went from $4 a day to nothing, essentially. Well, some of the children were older. My oldest sister went to work in the woolen mill in Windsor. My oldest brother went off to the merchant navy and sent most of his money home. So my mother, she was a really, really intelligent woman. She couldn't look after him. All these communities, all these counties had poorhouses. They had poorhouses before they had hospitals. In fact, they were reluctant to build hospitals because the poorhouses cost them so much. They didn't really want to spend any more money. And so she took him to the one in Hans County nearby, but he ran away. She took him to the Nova Scotia Hospital in Dartmouth, but they said he wasn't crazy. So And finally, he ended up in Kings County, had two hospitals, poor houses. Now, there were poor houses. You also call them poor farms because the poor houses were typically for people who couldn't look after themselves, and the municipality took over taking care of them. And they were typically farms because they could raise a lot of their own food and so on. But Kings County had two. One was the poor farm, and the other one was for people who were more mentally challenged. And that's where he was. And so, in fact, I never met him. All the time he was in there, my mother would go down and visit him, but it was quite a trip for her from Windsor to the other side of Kentville to visit him, and she never took us along, so... But we had a fantastic childhood. We had 2 acres and about 20 apple trees, and we planted potatoes. We got the ability to make sauerkraut from the Germans from the South Shore. So we made sauerkraut. One of my brothers would get a deer, and we made a lot of mincemeat. And we had a mincemeat, as you know, is ground mince with ground apples and... we were never hungry. And I mean, so we went to school and we would take lunches. I hated molasses sandwiches for lunch. They got so soggy by the lunchtime that, you know, they were... We went to a little one-room school in Curry's Corner, which was part of the... my birth certificate says I was born at home, but our mailbox was at Campbell's store in Curry's Corner, so my birth certificate says I was born in Curry's Corner. I was saying there, we used to walk the railway track to school because it went right by our house and right by the school, and it was the shortest way to go. And, I think I was quite successful at school. Probably that's the only reason I can think of why I kept going, and why at 29 I got a PhD from, you know, from California with that kind of a start. But I always worked there on farms. Windsor was a great place to grow up because there was lots to eat, but you also, there were farms and woods, and you go over and help them hay and that. And so my brother, my older brother and I moved there when we were about 11 and 13, and milked cows morning and night. And I say, I made $21.50 a week, 21 meals and 50 cents. So then I also drove a truck for Midland. I used to do that in the summertime. I should have ended up a truck driver probably, because I did enjoy it. There were some real characters. This Basil Wilder drove a truck for him, and the Mountie stopped him one day and said, "You've only got one plate on this truck." He said, "How do you think we're running that other truck?" I don't know the... Stop the Mounties. These were farmers in New England who were restricted on where they could get land there. And someone said, "Well, you know, there's this land up in Nova Scotia where the Acadians used to live." And so a lot of them came here, and they were called New England planters. And they took over some of the land. They didn't, the Acadians had built dikes. You know, the world's highest tides are in the Bay of Fundy. And the Acadians had built dikes. And apparently some of them were still living in the woods. And they hired them to show them how to maintain the dikes. And so that's an interesting chapter. Born in 1902, there were eight brothers. She was the oldest and the only girl. But she had very high social IQ. The rest of them were okay. she was amazing. You could, as a kid, you'd walk down the street with her, and you'd pass a guy that worked in the theater, the janitor, and she'd greet him. The next guy's another guy you'd greet, and then she'd run into the mayor. And as a kid, they were all the same. It was only years later that I went back and I realized that guy in the theater wasn't that bright, you know. But you couldn't tell from the way she spoke to them that was so. Mom, of course, born 1902, her husband in 89, so I mean 20 years, and the second, and so he was incapacitated when she was still a young woman, so she had boyfriends, no question. But every Sunday, she dressed us, particularly us four young guys, took us off to Sunday school in Windsor. The church was 2 miles away in Windsor. We didn't have a car, but we get down on the road and someone always picked us up and took us to the little Presbyterian church. And after church, Watson Maxner was a farmer, and he had a car and he would drive us home. A guy told me, the guy that was warden told me years later, "You know, at one time we thought of taking some of you kids away from her." And they'd had a fight on their hands, but he said, so we sent the assessor out to assess what the situation was in the house. You know who the assessor was? Watson Maxner. And he could see these kids dressed up every Sunday and marched off to Sunday school, and just can't be anything wrong there, you know. But I think she had that figured out. She was always looking after people. I think of an old lady that got old living by herself, and Mom went in one day, and she was just in terrible condition, so she brought her home. Our house would have been 20 by 20, and there was a little bedroom, a bunk room with two bunks in it that at least four of us, and sometimes more, slept in, and Mom and my sister in the other room. But anyway, she brought this lady home and put her in bed and looked after her till she died. And I have to say, she was also a big liberal, a big liberal. She was always the returning officer for our area. And even the people you knew were conservative, she treated them fairly, and they often said, no, didn't matter. She did her job. And I think the fact that she understood people, and I call it a high social IQ, and I believe that that's passed on. And I see today in my siblings and I, and even with our kids, are really super. And even now, we're here today, our granddaughter in Georgia, she's working, and people love her because she just understands people. I really believe that started with my mother. When I was in school, there were four guys that were students at the agricultural college, and they had two Jeeps to drive, and they were doing soil surveys all around, and they would stop and pick us up to take us to school, and I thought that was the neatest thing. I mean, that I'm going to go to agricultural college because they'll give you a Jeep to drive in the summer. And so that was kind of on my mind, so I went off to agricultural college in the fall of 1956. I had $200 in the bank. And the beauty of the agricultural college is that they looked after you. The registrar there and the English prof got me a job looking after a lady's furnace. So I got room and board for $7 a week. And that was about at Christmas time. I went home, and I gathered eggs on Christmas Day and New Year's Day and made another $50. So, and I got through to the end of the year, and I was running out, and my brother gave me $35, but he claimed me as a deduction, so I didn't have to pay him back. So I got through the first year. In fact, every summer thereafter, I had a job with the Nova Scotia Department of Agriculture. And so after 4 years, I graduated from Guelph with no debt. And then I worked for a year in Capreton as a poultry fieldman, a poultry advisor with the Nova Scotia Department of Agriculture. and got adopted by a family there in Marion Bridge, and just a fantastic time. You have to know Quebreton, you know, that you get nicknames there. So typically McDonald's and that, they're John or Donald, and then they get nicknamed Dicker or Bunt or something like that. Well, Mrs. McDonald's going to have none of that. She called her kids Henrietta, Harvey, Dovern, Vivian, and Keith. So they didn't get any nicknames. But the funny thing was, there was a guy who came from Marion Bridge, and he went to the States, and he was gone down there forever. His name was Norman. They never heard tell from Norman. Norman didn't write to anybody. Norman didn't keep in touch with anybody in Marion Bridge. And for years he was gone, to the point they just figured Norman had died. But Norman came back one day. So he's now known as Dead Norman. And if you go to Marion Bridge to this day and mention Dead Norman, they'll know exactly who you're talking about. I worked for a year there. Oh, some rich experiences there. I did have one guy who didn't speak English. He came from Eastern Europe, but his wife did, and so she would translate for me. But I went out there one day, and she said, "You might as well leave. He doesn't speak English, and I'm not speaking to him." So after a year, I went back to Guelph to do a master's degree in genetics and poultry breeding, and met my wife there in the summertime. So I left Guelph with a master's degree and a wife. And the professor I had there suggested that I should go to California, do a PhD. When I finished there, I was offered a job at Tulane University in New Orleans. Decided we were two Canadians, and so I came back and to the University of Saskatchewan Regina campus, and we spent 3 long years in Regina.
Oh yeah.
In 1970, I moved to Dalhousie, and that was fabulous. And my greatest discovery is how sex is determined in oysters. Well, most people don't know oysters tend to start life as males and switch to females as they get older. And so it's quite a unique trick. So I had some families of oysters in Prince Edward Island at stationed there, and we sexed them for 3 or 4 years. And we had some that were males and never changed, and some that were females and never, but there were a lot in between that were males and changed to females as they got older. It's biologically, it's a very important trick, because when you're a wee little oyster, you can contribute a lot of sperm because it doesn't take much energy, but you can't produce many eggs. So it's nice when you get big and older as a female to produce millions of eggs. So anyway, I devised a genetic mechanism for how that worked. I even had one that switched from male to female and back to male. Anyway, that's that. Yeah, so I'm Les Haley, actually Leslie Haley, but I found if I use Leslie, I got so much mail for Ms. Haley that I became known as Les.
You have been listening to Nothing to See Here, a program of experimental radio produced at NASCAD University. This episode was entitled Less. It featured the voice of retired Dalhousie University genetics professor Les Haley. Thanks this week to Shelley Simmons and Paul Haley. Sound design and mixing were by David Clark. Nothing to See Here is produced by David Clark at NASCAD University in Halifax. For more episodes of Nothing to See Here, please search for Nothing to See Here Radio on SoundCloud.com. And leave us a message on Facebook, Nothing to See Here Radio.